Hi everyone, and welcome to Ask the Horse Live. I'm your host, Haley Kerstetter, digital editor at thehorse.com. Hind limb lameness in horses can be challenging for owners to spot and veterinarians to diagnose. It can affect horses of all ages and disciplines. Subtle signs such as shortened stride, reluctance to go forward, or toe dragging might go unnoticed until the horse's performance declines or a more obvious issue appears. Catching hind limb lameness early can improve your horse's well-being and long-term soundness. This event is brought to you by American Regent Animal Health. To answer your questions, we are joined by two expert panelists, Dr. Tina Ursini from the University of Tennessee and Dr. Helen Mansfield from American Regent. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Haley.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dr. Ursini, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. I'm a graduate veterinarian of Michigan State University. Then I went on to do two rotating internships, one in Texas and one in Lexington, Kentucky. After that, I came to the University of Tennessee to do my residency in sports medicine and rehab and became boarded in the ACVSMR. And since then, I've stayed on and have now become director of the Equine Rehabilitation and Performance Center, where we do a lot of inpatient rehab and sports medicine.
Awesome. Thank you. And Dr. Mansfield, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure, Haley. And thanks for having me here tonight. Well, I was born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina, where I was involved in my local pony club, hunter jumper shows, as well as eventing. And at 14 years old, I got to see my horse's colic surgery, and that's when I decided I was going to be an equine vet. Then I went on to the University of Georgia for my undergraduate degree in Tuskegee for vet school. After vet school, I completed two internships, one in general medicine and surgery, and one in advanced reproduction. And then for almost 15 years, I was in equine private practice all over the East Coast, working on every type of horse, from your backyard pleasure horses, to your Amish work horses, to Olympic level show horses. I even spent a few months in Germany working on some sport horses. And then along all my travels, I also became certified in equine acupuncture as well as veterinary medical manipulation or chiropractic. I am now the senior manager of the professional services veterinarians at American Regent Animal Health, and I've been here for almost 2 years. Here, I provide education for veterinarians and horse owners nationwide, work on educational programs, as well as other modes of educating horse owners, practitioners, and future practitioners.
Awesome, thank you. Before we begin answering questions, I want to remind everyone of our Ask the Horse Live format. We're starting with questions submitted during registration. If you're listening live and would like to submit a question, please do so via the chat window. We'll do our best to get to as many of your questions as possible. If you're listening to the podcast recording of this event and would like to join us live in the future, please visit thehorse.com/askthehorselive to register for notifications. And with that, we're going to jump in. So my first question is for you, Dr. Ursini. It's from Cindy in Pennsylvania, who wants to know how you can differentiate between lameness caused by pain in the stifle versus the sacroiliac area.
Yeah, so Cindy, this can be a kind of a complicated way to sort this out, because both of those regions, you know, the stifle and the SI, are higher up on the leg. And proximal limb lameness in the hind limb can be tough to kind of differentiate because everything is pretty connected and it kind of relates to each other. When we're doing a lameness exam and trying to differentiate between those, there are a few manipulations that we can do. But again, it's really hard to isolate just the stifle or just the SI. Really recommend kind of a detailed exam with your veterinarian. And a lot of times they'll suggest maybe blocking or numbing certain areas of the limb. Specifically, if you are looking for stifle injury, we'll try and, you know, anesthetize the stifle with Novocaine or similar to Novocaine that you get at the dentist. And then once that joint is numb, if the horse is no longer lame, then that tells us that that's where the pain is coming from. So a detailed exam that where you kind of assess how the horse is moving and then, you know, specific blocks to try and further localize where it's coming from.
Dr. Mansfield, Hillary in Ontario says her horse was diagnosed with string halt. Can you explain what this is and any potential treatment options?
Sure. So string halt, which is also called equine reflex hypertonia, is this neuromuscular condition that causes this gait abnormality, and it's characterized by this kind of involuntary, exaggerated upward movement of one or both of the hind limbs. Kind of looks like a jerk or a hop, and they snap their hind legs up towards their abdomen and then forcefully stomp them on the ground. And actually, sometimes those concussive forces they stomp the ground with can cause a secondary injury. It generally occurs every step at the walk, less at the trot, and you really can't see it at the canter. It can be one-sided or affect both hind limbs. And technically, it's considered unsoundness, but some horses, affected horses, can successfully remain in work without major impairment because it's not really a reaction to pain, so those affected horses are not necessarily uncomfortable. And there's two forms of string halt. There's this conventional form, usually seen sporadically, and it's been attributed to trauma in the areas of the hind leg, like the stifle or hock, or even foot pain. But the true cause is actually unknown. And then they also have a form in Australia and New Zealand that's occurred by this toxicity from this plant called flatweed. And while it is called Australian string halt, there have been some random cases reported in like California. And also, shocker, the toxic principle is also unknown. But that's usually bilateral in that case, occurring in both hind legs. Now, there's no definitive treatment for string halt. Some horses may recover spontaneously. In the cases of the plant poisoning, horses should be removed from the toxic plant. They do have a surgery where they can resect part of the muscle and tendon of the lateral digit extensor near the hock, and that may alleviate the signs, but the success rate is variable. And sometimes you can administer muscle relaxants and other medications, and that may be helpful, but the effects are often temporary.
Dr. Ursini, Rose in Illinois asks if borium on a horse's hind shoes can affect hind limb mechanics or cause lameness.
Yeah, so we use around here, you know, in East Tennessee, there's a lot of people that want to go riding in the mountains, and through that process, and a lot of those trails can be tricky and slippery. And so to add traction, especially to the hind limbs of these horses, instead of like heel cocks or anything that we would put, you know, sometimes in the venting horse's shoes, a lot of people will have their farrier add borium to the bottom of the shoe. And it's really kind of a, you can add it to the heels, you can add it to the toe of the shoe. And it's really, the idea is to give the horse kind of a cleat, if you can visualize that in your mind. And so when the ground is nice and soft and slippery, it does give the horse some nice traction. It helps them kind of navigate a lot of those hills and ravines and, you know, slippery rocks and things like that. But when they are on firm ground, or like concrete or around gravel, you know, in the barn, it can change kind of how the foot interacts with the ground. And depending on how much borium is on the bottom of the shoe and where it is, if that borium can't sink into the ground to the point that the shoe is flat and the foot is flat, it can technically change how that foot interacts with the ground. As far as can it cause lameness, can it affect hind limb mechanics? You know, technically, yes. Again, just depending on how that foot interacts with the ground, how long these horses are in borium. A lot of times we try and just do it seasonally. So when we need to, around here in Tennessee, it's really common for the hunt horses to have borium added or cocks added to their shoes, especially in the fall and through the winter when we're trying to, you know, hunt across country in those slippery kind of wet fall conditions.
Dr. Mansfield, Randy in California wants to know if regular veterinary chiropractic work could help improve his horse's hind end stiffness and lameness. And what about massage?
So I'm a big advocate for integrative therapies like chiropractic and massage. Just remember, though, that integrative therapies are not meant to replace traditional veterinary medicine. I do find they work best when they're integrated with the traditional approaches. That being said, though, chiropractic care does offer numerous benefits for the horse, including improved movement and pain relief. It can also help with issues like stiffness, muscle pain, and sometimes even some behavioral problems. When a chiropractor examines the patient, what we do is we look to identify joints with reduced range of motion. A lot of people are familiar with the concept of a bone being out of place, and it's really common for people to have heard of specific joints being quote-unquote out. However, I usually try and avoid that terminology because it kind of gives an inaccurate picture of what's actually occurring. As opposed to that joint actually being out of place, the joint is actually restricted in its normal range of motion. These restricted joints are then corrected with the chiropractic adjustment. So the goal of any adjustment is to restore that optimal range of motion to that joint, which then will alleviate inflammation and pressure on the surrounding nerves and soft tissue. So, and equine massage therapy is becoming a more common part of management of a lot of these equine athletes. The basic rationale being that it may affect a number of those physiologic systems as well as cellular and fascial components of the muscular system. It uses a lot of techniques that were first developed in humans and has been reported to increase range of motion and stride length, reduce nociceptive pain, and some of those physiologic stress responses. And there's also some research that says it may improve some aspects of exercise recovery.
Dr. Ursini, Donna in Texas says she has a horse in her barn who is recovering from EPM and has some muscle atrophy on the right side. Can you recommend any rehab exercises to help this horse rebuild muscle?
Yeah, for sure. You know, rebuilding muscle and kind of getting these horses back to normal motion, especially after something like EPM, is really important. The longer we allow for asymmetry, the longer we allow that that muscle, you know, kind of sits and just hangs out, the harder it is to kind of recover and regroup from that. So the specific exercises we would do would depend on the muscle that's involved. Now, a lot of times with EPM, we see changes in the gluteal muscles specifically. That's one of the muscles that's maybe more common to be affected by an infection of EPM. So specifically for the gluteal muscles, you're going to try to get those horses to push off, really load their hind end. Walking up and down hills would be great for this horse. Some serpentine work just to make sure that we've got abduction and adduction taken care of. Stepping over ground poles would be another one, especially if like the quadriceps is involved as well. And so asking this horse really just to kind of initiate and engage in their hind end is typically what I would start with, not knowing any more information specifically about this horse.
Dr. Mansfield, Jennifer in Kentucky wants to know how to help a 15-year-old gelding who occasionally has his hock lock in place. Flexion tests did not reveal any major issues. If he's standing in his stall for a while or standing still in general, and then they go to back him up, he will jerk his hind leg up and keep it flexed and then shake it like his hock is stuck in that position. It's not predictable or regular.
So this sounds a little more like either he's having an issue with his stifle locking or even possibly some shivers going on. So one of the things for these guys is, one, I feel like moving around is key. I am a big advocate of motion is lotion. So trying to keep these horses moving, also trying to do some things to help strengthen the hind end. Now, if it's not causing lameness and it's not causing other issues, I think trying to do some of those strengthening exercises where you strengthen the core, whether that be some ground poles or hill work or cavalettis, trying to get these guys moving and strengthen those areas is probably one of the keys there.
Dr. Ursini, we have a question from Nancy in our live audience who has a 4-year-old filly that her vet diagnosed with a bone cyst in her stifle along with OCD. The vet says the condition is likely genetic and she'll progressively get worse over time. Nancy is wondering if there's anything that can be done to help the mare stay more comfortable. She cannot be ridden because of these stifle issues.
Oh, yeah, Nancy, that's a tough one. Stifle cysts are definitely hard to manage at times and can cause some pretty significant lameness. The biggest problem with cysts is it's damaging to the subchondral bone plate in that the cartilage sits right over the top. So a lot of times the cartilage is kind of an innocent bystander. And then once the cartilage starts to collapse, we get, you know, pretty progressive and advanced osteoarthritis pretty quickly. There are some things that we've tried to do in these horses medically, transcondylar screws. So with surgery, we can try to put a screw across that cyst And the idea behind that is to try and bridge and stabilize the bridge and allow for that bone to potentially fill in. That's most successful, at least based on the literature, in younger horses. Again, a lot depends on how much cartilage collapse is already there, because you can appreciate that, you know, we can't regrow cartilage. Everything that we do is trying to preserve as much cartilage as possible. So if there's already cartilage collapse into that cyst, it's just really hard to get those horses back. It fills with fibrocartilage and not articular cartilage, and that's just not as robust. Unfortunately, the stifle is not a spare part in the horse, and so when they do have damage and disease there, it can be pretty hard to manage. The other thing that we'll do with horses with, you know, OCDs or inflammation in the stifle is, you know, just try and keep the inflammation down as much as possible. Keeping these horses moving low intensity, low grade, as much as they're comfortable is important, but obviously we don't want to do too much in that they hurt themselves or we're promoting inflammation. Sometimes we, you know, we'll inject some corticosteroids just to try and suck the inflammation down. We've got some regenerative therapies, PRP, stem cells. We've tried a lot of things in the veterinary world, and we don't have a slam dunk cure for these, unfortunately. It's just kind of trying to mitigate symptoms as much as possible. And, you know, if she is a younger horse and you wanted to be the most aggressive, you know, I would suggest maybe reaching out to a surgeon and seeing if she would be a candidate for the transcondylar screw. Because, again, we usually see a better result in the younger animals.
Awesome. Dr. Orsini, Stacy in Alberta asks if you can explain common signs of ligament tears in the stifle and treatment options.
Oh, yeah, there are lots of ligaments in the stifle. Ones that we see probably the most would be meniscal tears and that cranial meniscal tibial ligament that kind of ties that meniscus down in the front of the tibia and stabilizes everything. That's the most common kind of sport horse injury. We do have secondary to trauma. If the horse kicks something or gets hung up a lot of times, we can have cruciate tears in horses, just like in dogs. Usually those horses are quite lame, and those are pretty hard to manage. Medial collateral ligaments could also be damaged. They all kind of cause or show the same clinical signs of just hind limb lameness, honestly. And that would be, you know, circling back to my very first question, would be really localizing that lameness would be really important. So trying to numb certain parts of the leg, and then once we get it localized, do some more advanced diagnostics, such as, you know, ultrasound, radiographs of the stifle, trying to rule out bony problems or a cyst, for instance, if it does localize to the stifle. There's some new technology that we can do now with CTs getting larger, as we can actually CT stifles. Depending on the size of the horse, some people can even MRI stifles. So starting at the beginning, localizing it, the lameness to the stifle would be the first part. Rule out bony problems would be the next step. And then doing some more advanced diagnostics, ultrasound, potentially CT arthrogram, potentially an MRI, just to try and get the best idea of exactly what we're working with. Sometimes it's even okay, you know, just to stick a scope in the joint and look around, and we can actually get a decent view of at least half the joint and see what those ligaments look like. So once we have kind of a soft tissue injury in or around the stifle diagnosed, you know, the next step is how do we treat it? And it really depends on how bad it is. If it's a small tear that's maybe near the bone ligament interface, you know, shockwave is a great modality to use to try and just quiet that down, promote regeneration and healing. I've stuck, you know, PRP, stem cells, ultrasound guided into a lot of those. It really just depends on what the injury is. We can do arthroscopic guided stem cells to really stick, you know, the regenerative product exactly where the injury is, where we can see it. So the gamut is kind of wide open on those, and it really just depends on the exact injury, how bad it is, and then how aggressive do we want to be to promote that horse to be an athlete.
Dr. Mansfield, Pamela in Utah says her 31-year-old horse has osteoarthritis in his spine, which causes some proprioceptive defects. What are some management and treatment options for the horse to improve his quality of life?
So when it comes to some medical therapy, treatment options out there can be things like muscle relaxants, anti-inflammatories, local injection with corticosteroids, possibly even some bisphosphonates. Then you have your alternative therapies, things like mesotherapy, acupuncture, and chiropractic. Now, working with your equine chiropractor can help kind of loosen your joints, relax the muscles, and relieve some back pain. They can also probably give you some daily stretches and exercises to do with your horse to help engage and strengthen your horse's core and back, because stretching exercises can help to decrease pain, improve that range of motion, and strengthen some muscles. Pamela, I don't know if your horse is still in work or not, but exercise regimes can also be helpful to improve some of that flexion of the spine. And that can include things like working on the lunge line, because that allows them to do this unweighted warm-up and loosening of the back and the hindquarters. I really like the Pessoa system. Using that during lunges, lunging encourages some spinal flexion and loosening up of that back. It can also help stimulate the core muscles and improve that gait quality without that increased workload on those lower limbs. Just like with us, when you strengthen your core, it's good for your back.
Dr. Orsini, Ren in New Zealand wants to know if you can explain compensatory hind limb lamenesses. How do veterinarians determine the true source of pain?
So this all comes back again to the lameness exam, which I feel like I'm a little bit of a broken record here. But, you know, when we do a lameness exam, the first thing that we try to do is figure out what is the most the biggest problem or the most painful thing in that horse that day. And so that usually, you know, requires a visual exam. Sometimes we'll do some flexions and really try and see what is the lameness or lamenesses, how many limbs are affected, how are they moving on different surfaces, and then start to, once we pick, oh, hey, I think his right hind limb is the most affected, we need to start doing some diagnostic blocks to try and localize it. Once we get it localized, then we might start to see some compensatory lameness or secondary lameness after the first lameness is now resolved. So yes, my right hind limb hurts the most, and so I'm going to limp off that the most. But once that, you know, we get to a point where the area that's causing the pain is numb, oh, by the way, now my left hind hurts too, but I couldn't limp off of it because, you know, you can't limp off both at one time. So horses, you know, the more and more I work with the physical therapists in our group, and the more that you just get your hands on sport horses, you appreciate that pretty much every horse, no matter what, has some degree of compensatory patterns. And really, that's the fun part about rehab and sports medicine is trying to put those puzzle pieces together as far as, yeah, this is the primary problem or was the primary problem, but now the horse has to deal with weakness in this area or soreness in this other area that caused secondary as a compensatory component while they were struggling with that, you know, primary problem. So a lot of times I think that's where we miss the boat as veterinarians is, oh yeah, you know, we think the horse is hawk sores, we inject his hawks and just go on with them and don't worry about it. But, you know, we do appreciate that, you know, that horse is secondarily back sore. That horse has maybe secondary SI pain. And some horses, once you get rid of the hawk pain, for sure, they can jump right back and they can go right back to full work. But some horses just need a little bit more help to kind of break that cycle and get back to moving in a functional way. So I hope that answers your question. But yeah, compensatory lameness can be really frustrating. And I would encourage you with your veterinarian to have some patience with them, because a lot of times on the initial exam, we'll say, yeah, you know, this horse primarily is hock sore, so let's start with that. But appreciate that you might have to come back and I might have to continue working on this horse. And I might tell you at the next appointment, okay, his hocks are better, but now his SI is sore, now his back is sore. So we have to be able to be malleable and also kind of help that horse through every step of this to get him back to full work.
Dr. Orsini, I have one more stifle question for you. We have several people in our live audience who are asking about some ways that horses tear soft tissue in the stifle.
Yeah, so soft tissue tears, if we knew exactly what caused all of them, I would be, you know, have a lakeside resort somewhere on a beach because I would sell my secrets. So the meniscus is, you know, meniscal tears and cranial meniscal tibial ligaments, that's kind of an occupational hazard. Like, that happens in horses that are in work. For the most part, horses don't really get cruciate tears unless they legitimately have a significant trauma. So, you know, being hung up in a fence or kicking through a wall and then kind of yanking, or, you know, falling in a hole or something like that. We thankfully, unlike in dogs, we thankfully don't have a lot of, you know, cruciate disease to have to deal with. Medial collateral ligament tears can also be kind of an accumulated trauma or so kind of a repetitive, you know, trauma builds up over time that eventually, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, or it can be, again, due to a legitimate trauma. He got kicked or got his leg hung up, or, you know, while the foot was immobilized somewhere, he tried to yank his foot free, and that puts a lot of torque and stress on the stifle. So, you know, I wish I knew what caused truly all soft tissue injuries in the stifle, because like I said, I would be, you know, selling my secrets on how to prevent them. But a lot of it is, you know, just being an athlete, unfortunately.
Dr. Mansfield, we have a question from Robin in our live audience who wants to know, what are the long-term effects of hock injections?
So, you know, we haven't had a following that as much, but hock injections, I feel like a lot of people are scared of joint injections and they think that they're gonna, you know, it just depends on what we're injecting in the hock. That's the cool thing about vet med. So veterinary medicine has just, even in the years I've been practicing, has grown so many leaps and bounds. It used to be all you had was steroids and HA to put in a joint. And yes, steroids are often warranted, and some of them have no known deleterious effects on cartilage and your hocks or any other joint. Some of them are, they just decrease the inflammation. Now, obviously you want to use steroids judiciously, but now we have new things out there like your orthobiologics. And then you have your regenerative medicines and your polyacrylamide gels. And the way that veterinary med's advancing, I don't think people should be as scared of injections like they used to be, that they were going to cause more long-term problems. I think inflammation is the source of all disease, so we need to treat and address inflammation, and now we have all these different ways of treating it more appropriately.
Yeah, I think I'd just chip in as a follow-up to that, especially in hock injections. Where we talk about where we want to preserve cartilage the most is in those high motion joints, right? And so those lower hock joints really have minimal motion. And they don't contribute to, you know, the horse bending its leg. That all comes from that, you know, top joint, the tarsal curl joint. So as horses age and develop arthritis, a lot of times they'll fuse those joints. And so preserving cartilage in the distal intertarsal and tarsal metatarsal is not really necessarily a priority for me. It's not like I really want to just go destroy their cartilage, but it's not one of those joints that I'm like, ooh, how many times are we putting steroids in this thing? Now, we have had horses that become refractory to steroids, and then we have to help them fuse in other ways, like drilling or promoting arthrodesis or ankylosis of those joints, because it's bone on bone that's painful. So once it's fused and it no longer moves, those horses go right back to work and you wouldn't even know the difference.
Awesome. Thank you both. Dr. Mansfield, Jennifer in Tennessee says her horse is short strided and asks if this could be indicative of pain in the hind limbs.
So there are actually multiple reasons that a horse can be short strided. Some of them being lameness or musculoskeletal issues, neurologic issues, conformation, or even as we were talking about before, compensatory lameness. Because when a horse experiences pain in a limb, it's going to try and minimize weight bearing on that limb, which leads to that shortened stride. Pain in their joints, muscles, tendons, or ligaments can even lead to a restricted movement or shortened stride. Horses that are sore backed or have pain and discomfort in more than limb do not always show overt signs of lameness. Instead, they may just have this short, choppy gait. Neurologic conditions, like I said, can affect a horse's gait. That causes uneven stride lengths and lack of coordination, which could show up as short striding. And then those conformational flaws that show short striding often have to do with the shoulder or the pastern angles. So what happens is that upright or straight shoulder or pastern limit the reach and extension of the front legs, which then leads to a shorter, kind of less fluid stride. And then you also have horses with shorter strides when they have a narrow base conformation, which means their forelimbs kind of angle inwards. And then finally, hocks can also play a role in stride length. A really straight or excessively angled hock can affect that horse's ability to really extend its hind legs fully.
Dr. Orsini, Patricia in Florida asks if you can explain DSLD. What are the causes, signs, and treatment options?
Yeah, so degenerative suspensory ligament disease, or what some people call dropped fetlocks, is a condition we're appreciating more and more, and it usually coincides with older horses as they age. Specific causes, some of it is conformational. Some horses that, just like Dr. Mansfield just said, they're a little bit more post-legged or straight behind. They just put a bit more stress on their suspensories, it seems like. Those are the horses that if they get proximal suspensory disease or suspensory desmitis, they just don't respond to therapy as well. Now, we don't know the biomechanics, truthfully. We haven't put strain gauges in things to know exactly what the strain is on any of these structures. But it just seems that, common things happen commonly in certain situations. And those straight-legged, kind of post-legged horses do tend to have more issues with their suspensories. And when we talk about degenerate suspensories, specifically what you'll see is they'll start to sink a lot in their fetlocks. And so the suspensory ligament is named for what it does. And it suspends, via the sesamoids, the whole fetlock apparatus and kind of acts as a sling to hold the fetlock up and away from the ground, kind of anti-gravity. So when it gets stretched, when it gets long and is not quite as strong as it usually is or should be, those fetlocks start to drop, and you actually see almost kind of a 90-degree angle from the pastern through the fetlock and then up the metatarsus or the cannon bone behind. So once you start to see that's more of a right angle rather than, kind of an acute angle or a sloping angle, that's when you should be concerned about degenerative suspensory disease. Also, horses that kind of just bounce and sink in their fetlocks, those could be, signs of degenerate suspensory disease. As far as treatment options, it's really difficult if they truly have degenerate suspensories. The things we know from the literature is the most we can keep those horses moving comfortably without acquiring new damage and new trauma is the most important thing. So these horses do really well or tend to do better with, paddock turnout, where they can just low impact walk all day long. They don't really seem to appreciate being stuck in a stall and not being able to move around. If there are some kind of core lesions or discrete areas of tearing, we could reach for a few more of the regenerative products. I'm a little bit leery and careful in those unless there's a true discrete core lesion, because putting any fluid into the tendon or ligament is going to disrupt a few of those fibers, and that's definitely not what we want in these horses going forward. We want to keep all the fibers that we have nicely cross-linked and together. And usually what we'll see on ultrasound with these guys is it just starts to get unorganized, kind of degenerate, accumulated scar tissue, and there's not a whole lot of discrete tearing. It's just kind of everything lets go, and it's not as strong as it used to be. There have been a few orthotics thought about to support them and support these horses going forward. The problem with those is you start to get, you know, rubs on their pastern and their heel bulbs. They never really fit quite well. The horses can't really live in them forever. So if you can get to a point of low impact, kind of normal homeostasis, figure out what this horse can maintain and just keep it doing that. And I'm not even saying that you can't necessarily ride the horse. It's just figure out what that horse specifically can handle and then try to maintain that as much as possible.
Dr. Mansfield, Stephanie in California says her horse is sound at the walk and trot, but has trouble holding the lead behind when cantering on a circle. Could this be indicative of hind end lameness? And how can a veterinarian confirm lameness if the horse appears sound at the walk and trot?
So cross cantering, difficulty picking up or maintaining a lead of the canter can be a pretty common performance problem that we encounter in vet med. And it can be the result of pain or a dysfunction. When a horse wants to always resist picking up a particular lead, it's usually because it's physically difficult for them or painful to do so. Lead problems may result from discomfort or stiffness somewhere in the legs or the body or the back. And many times the horse isn't overtly lame at the walk or trot, and he may even be able to pick up that lead with little problem without the added weight of a rider, but it still can be this physiologic problem. So first, I think a thorough lameness exam by your veterinarian is warranted if you have concerns. They can do flexion tests, lunging, a riding exam, et cetera, and follow that with appropriate diagnostics. And if all of that is normal, you may need to go a little more in depth with diagnostics, maybe with something like a bone scan or the lameness locator, which can sometimes pick up some of those subtle lamenesses and compensatory issues.
Dr. Ursini, Shan from our live audience wants to know if it's possible to tell if a horse's lameness is caused by arthritis without imaging, and if not, what type of imaging does a veterinarian pursue to work up hind limb lamenesses?
So how do we know what's causing the lameness at the level of the joint? I don't know that we ever truly, absolutely always know. There can be diagnostics that can be indicative. So for sure, say we're doing a lameness exam, we think this horse's hawk is sore, we go to anesthetizer, block the hawk, and the horse appears then sound after the hawk is numb. The next step I would do, and the least invasive, would be radiographs. So radiographs show us the bone, but they do lag behind. They don't show us articular cartilage, which is really what arthritis is or starts as, right? They don't really show us anything of the health of the synovium. They just show us architecture of the bones and not necessarily that within the bone. So we're seeing more and more, subchondral bone disease and bone edema and bone pain in these horses that do tend to initially look like they're a typical hawk arthritis or hawk OA. So the first step would be radiographs. Depending on the joint, I may reach for an ultrasound just to see if there are any periarticular lesions, but then we're talking advanced imaging. So then we need, maybe a bone scan to see if the bone is hot or, inflamed or high activity. But I'm likely, if I have it localized, more likely to reach for a CT or an MRI to get that three-dimensional aspect of exactly what is happening on all levels. And that would be kind of my diagnostic path in both invasiveness and in cost, kind of going forward.
Dr. Orsini, Linda in Montana says her mare's stifle appears to cave in or turn in when she walks, almost appearing disconnected. What might cause this?
Yeah, so this kind of twisting, it usually happens, you know, as the hind limb goes through mid-stance and kind of stance phase. So they step pretty normal, they have a decent foot flight. And then when they go to truly step on it and roll over that foot, you kind of see the hock twist out, and the stifle will sometimes twist in. It can be caused by a lot of things. Typically, if the horse is otherwise sound and no effusion, no other history of joint problems, it's likely just due to a secondary weakness. So whether it's typically the bicep would be what I would think of. A lot of those lateral stifle stabilizers, biceps, tensor fascia lata, to some regard the quadriceps, maybe a little bit of the middle gluteal, you know, that comes down. Those muscles are likely weak in that horse. Now the question is why are they weak? Are they weak because the horse is not using them appropriately? Are they weak because the horse is actually a little bit of low-grade lame and is guarding that limb and not using it, again, to the full extent that it should be used to maintain symmetry and maintain musculature? So that would be, you know, definitely cause for a complete and full diagnostic lameness exam, just to see, make sure that there's nothing we don't have to treat. And then if there's not, you know, we would have more of a physical rehabilitation, some therapeutic exercises to promote normal joint function, and rebuild a lot of those muscles that aren't stabilizing that stifle appropriately.
Dr. Mansfield, Elaine in Texas wants to know what the major causes of SI injuries are.
So equine sacroiliac or SI joint pain can stem from various causes, things like trauma, repetitive stress, poor conformation, and arthritis. Performance horses, especially those involved in jumping and dressage, often are at a higher risk. Underlying lameness or muscle weakness can also contribute to SI issues because the horse compensates for other problems. The SI ligaments can tear, just as ligaments and tendons in a leg can. And the SI joint itself, like the hock or any other joint, can become inflamed. And over time, arthritis can develop as cartilage wears away and bone remodels. Now, there are acute and kind of chronic forms of SI disease. Acute injuries are usually due to like a single traumatic event, like a fall, and they result in this significant acute onset lameness. And then on the contrast side, you have a chronic condition that presents more as a gradual onset of signs, like lack of impulsion of the hind limbs, resulting in hind end stiffness, or even just low-grade intermittent lameness. But SI problems are pretty hard to spot. The joint has almost no range of motion. It's buried under layers of muscle and fat, so you can't really see or feel it. And the signs of SI pain are often frustratingly vague. Some of the first signs may be a change in your horse's performance or attitude. They're not working at their usual level or seem unwilling to work, lack impulsion behind, or their quality of movement just isn't what it was. Heck, your farrier may even tell you that your horse is becoming difficult to shoe behind. But being aware of some of these signs can help you and your veterinarian identify and maybe treat these problems earlier.
Dr. Orsini, Laura Renee in California asked if oral joint supplements can improve or slow progression of osteoarthritis in the hind limbs. How can she choose a high-quality joint supplement?
Yeah, so this is a question that, you know, clients ask kind of on the regular. So everybody wants to do the best they can to prevent all these problems that we're talking about, right? And that is really important to me. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? So if we can prevent, if we can promote longevity, we're doing a good job. The problem with the oil, a lot of the oral supplements, at least originally, we're talking about, you know,
it's really variable from a horse to horse basis what they actually absorb from their GI tract. And with that being unpredictable, it was really hard to A, come up with a dose, and B, figure out do they actually do anything. There's many other supplements out there now. You know, they've got
am I back connected? Sorry if I jumped off there. So, you know, we've got a bunch of products on the market, and everybody wants to have, every time you turn around, there's a new oral supplement, there's a new joint supplement, and it's really hard to navigate. And I'll be honest, I can't keep up with all of them and the new ones. And so, you know, I kind of let them fizzle out for a little bit. I don't jump on every new Facebook ad. I don't jump on every new product. I let the research kind of speak for themselves. And then the ones that do make a difference will come to the top. You'll hear about them. They'll stick around a little bit more. And I encourage you to go in and look at the literature that they have presented. And every, you know, company is going to have it on their website. Go into the actual paper and see what clinical outcomes they could report. So lameness scores, motion scores, owner satisfaction, things like that. And don't get stuck in the weeds of, oh, this one cytokine was improved. This one biomarker was lower, because we don't know what any of that means. Now, how do you pick a good one, and what do I look for in a high quality joint supplement? I do think you get what you pay for in general. I tend to reach for the more parenteral, so injectable joint supplements. I think they're a little bit more potent. The bioavailability is a little bit higher. But even then, the oral ones, we need to, the bigger companies that do a better job at maintaining their supply, they're going to have a little bit more of a consistent product. And remember that the oral supplements are not regulated by anyone, just like human vitamins, right? There is no FDA regulation. You can put literally anything on the label, and nobody's going to police that. So, you know, don't just pick the cheapest one out there. Pick the ones, the companies that have done at least some due diligence and research to show true clinical outcomes, the ones that have stuck around a little bit longer, and the ones that are a little bit bigger to maintain a consistent supply, so that you feel a little bit better that maybe the whole bucket isn't just, you know, that alfalfa flavoring filler.
Dr. Mansfield, Anne in Pennsylvania wants to know if her horse being reluctant to lay down could be a sign of pain in the hind limbs.
So a horse's reluctance to lie down to sleep is a significant concern, because that can lead to sleep deprivation and negatively impact their overall well-being and health. Because horses need to lie down to achieve REM sleep, which is kind of crucial for that well-being. And yes, Anne, one of the major factors that would cause a horse not to lie down to sleep is pain. Some other factors could also be environmental or behavioral. So first, you want to rule out environmental. So you want to make sure you're has plenty of space to lie down, adequate bedding, and the herd dynamics haven't changed, like a new horse recently being introduced, or he or she is away from their buddy, which causes them added stress. Behavioral involves like sleep disorders and changes in that pecking order in the herd. So if you rule out environmental and behavioral, then it's time to have your vet out to see if you have a source of pain. So you and your vet can do a lameness exam or whatever you need to do to find out that source of that pain and formulate a treatment plan so you can adequately address it and so that horse can comfortably lie down.
Dr. Orsini, Kim in Arizona asks what orthobiologics might be used to manage osteoarthritis in the hock joints.
So there's a ton of orthobiologics out there now. Thankfully, we don't have just steroids in our toolbox anymore. And a lot of my decision making really depends on, A, what specific joint is involved. So in the hock, there's actually, you know, five joints. We talk about the tarsocoral joint, the proximal intertarsal joint, the distal intertarsal joint, the tarsal metatarsal joint, and then the talocalcaneal joint. So depending on which of those is involved, I'm going to reach for a few different, you know, orthobiologics or different options. Like I alluded to earlier, we always do a risk reward and kind of a you know, bang for your buck type of assessment. And in those lower hock joints, the DITs, the TMTs, I don't think it's wrong to stay with the corticosteroids personally. Some people have reached for more of the ProStride or, you know, just HA. I think steroids alone work the best in my clientele of horses in those lower hock joints. The upper hock joints, for sure, that have more motion, have more articular cartilage, more dynamics as far as the actual biomechanics and motion of the horse. I do try to stay in the regenerative realm as long as possible. So again, ProStride, PRP, maybe stem cells. The polyacrylamide gels are quite fascinating as far as, you know, what they might be able to mitigate at the level of the synovium specifically. And that's probably the most important thing to think about with osteoarthritis is, yes, the cartilage breakdown, yes, the inflammation, but appreciate that those are all symptoms. Osteoarthritis is a synovial disease, and it changes how the synovium makes joint fluid. It changes all of those nerve endings in the synovium. And so if we can reach for a product early in the phase of disease that mitigates and changes how that synovium reacts to the environment of that, you know, inflamed environment, we actually might have a chance to change that horse's future. Once we get into just, you know, trying to beat down the inflammation, just trying to keep the horses comfortable, keeping them moving as much as possible, you know, we're just treating symptoms. No matter what we do, we have yet to have a osteoarthritis cure. We do not have a disease modifying, as we would say, treatment where we can change the course of the disease. Really, all we're trying to do is slow it down in horses and in humans, which is why joint replacement is so common. If we had a cure for osteoarthritis, if we could mitigate its symptoms and stop its progression completely, we wouldn't need so many joint replacements. So that was a long-winded answer to what would you do for hock disease, but you know that's kind of where I went.
Perfect, thank you. Dr. Mansfield, Nicole in Vermont asks if polysulfated glycosaminoglycan might be a good option for treating her horse with hock arthritis.
So polysulfated glycosaminoglycan is a great option for your horse's hock arthritis. It's been an FDA-approved treatment for osteoarthritis for over 30 years. There's no generics available. It can help to decrease inflammation, increase joint fluid, and slow down that disease process. It's detectable in the joints within 2 hours of intramuscular injection, and joint fluid has nearly doubles within 48 hours of injection. But I do encourage you to discuss it with your veterinarian first to make sure they also believe it's a good fit for your horse.
Dr. Orsini, Lori in California says she has a senior horse that has osteoarthritis in his hind limbs, causing him to drag his hind feet at times. Can you recommend any strengthening exercises for this horse? And what treatments might a veterinarian use to help a horse that presents like this?
Yeah, so toe dragging in the hind limbs is a pretty common presenting complaint. If you know you wanted to say what is the most likely cause of that, it's usually hock arthritis, you know, those lower hock joints. Those horses just aren't comfortable kind of really engaging their hocks and swinging it underneath them. So you could do the local approach to those joints and treat them locally with, you know, whatever injection you want. The IMPS gags, depending on how lame the horse is kind of how I direct. Do I do local therapy? Do I do systemic therapy? Equiox is also a great option for some of these, especially older horses with multiple areas of low-grade inflammation, low-grade arthritis, because you're treating them kind of all at once with a systemic approach of, you know, a furacoxib, a wimpy NSAID, if you will, that we, you know, seems to have less side effects. That's not to say that there can't be any side effects, but I do think it's reasonably safe for daily use. So that would be a way to kind of start just to slow down the whole body. For sure, therapeutic exercise, keeping this horse moving as much as he can do comfortably would be really helpful. Anything that you can do to promote flexion of those joints. So to me, if this was a horse in my rehab plan for therapeutic exercise, he would be stepping over ground poles. You know, occasionally those would be elevated depending on his comfort level so that he really has to step up and over something. We do a lot of pedestal work too. So kind of a 4x4, 4 feet by 4 feet kind of elevated, you know, pedestal or platform that really asking the horse to step on. So not only load the foot that is on the ground so that the other hind foot can step up, but then that foot that steps up not only is at a higher level, so it's a little bit more gravity, a little bit more force to contend with, but then it picks up the whole body, if that makes sense. So those would be a lot of the therapeutic exercises that I would do. Backing up is also a great exercise to try and promote hind end engagement, kind of unlock that lumbosacral segment and get that horse kind of more fluid. And then there's really nothing better if you think about, you know, if you're getting a little older, you're stiff and sore, water aerobics is a great exercise. And that's where I would, you know, potentially reach out to a local, you know, aqua tread, if you've got an underwater treadmill, to for a nice, comfortable, full range of motion exercise that also is going to build a lot of muscle and supporting muscle so that those joints aren't just, you know, kind of on their own. We can have muscle to help support them and encourage normal motion going forward.
Dr. Mansfield, this is our last question of the night, and it's from Joan in Wisconsin, who asks if metabolic problems such as PPID could affect her horse's hind limb lameness.
That's a really great question. PPID and hind end lameness in horses are related in several ways. Firstly, you've got laminitis. Laminitis is a common complication of PPID and a significant cause of lameness. It's often thought that laminitis only occurs in the front beat, but it can occur in any or all of the feet. And PPID horses are more susceptible to laminitis, with some studies saying that they're 4 times more likely to develop it. Then you've got some suspensory ligament injuries. Research has also suggested that these horses are increased risk for soft tissue injuries, particularly those of the suspensory ligament. One study even said they had a greater degeneration of the suspensory ligament in PPID horses compared to horses of the same age without PPID. And then muscle atrophy and back pain are often seen in these horses because PPID can cause muscle loss across the top line, potentially leading to poor saddle fit and more back pain. And then that back pain can manifest as lameness in your hind end. And also now we have what's equine metabolic osteoarthritis, and that's the development of arthritis in these horses that have equine metabolic syndrome, or EMS. EMS is an endocrine disorder characterized by insulin resistance and obesity. And the connection between EMS and OA is still being investigated, with some of the research suggesting that this chronic low-grade inflammation that we associate with EMS may contribute to the development or progression of OA. Now, it is important to remember that not all horses with PPID or EMS will develop lameness, but the risk is significantly higher. So that early diagnosis and management of PPID can help mitigate the risk of laminitis and some of these other related complications that may lead to these lamenesses. So if you suspect your horse has PPID or is exhibiting signs of lameness, it's really crucial to consult your veterinarian for proper diagnosis and treatment.
Well, that's all the time we have for tonight. We've covered a lot, and I hope our listeners have learned as much as I have. Thank you so much, Drs. Ursini and Mansfield, for joining me.
Thanks, Haley.
Thanks again for having me.
And thank you to American Regen Animal Health for sponsoring this event. Finally, thank you to our audience for listening and sending in these questions. If you're listening to us after the live event as a podcast episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and recommend Ask the Horse Live to a friend. Until next time, from everyone at the horse, have a great night.